Right on time. Welcome everyone to this episode of the ABC Health Podcast series, part of our ongoing four-part dialogue on the digital tech revolution transforming Africa's healthcare sector. My name again is Dr. Maurice Atoki, the Chief Executive Officer of the African Business Coalition for Health, also known as ABC Health. And at ABC Health, our mission is to drive collaboration between the private and public sectors in advancing sustainable healthcare solutions for Africa. We believe firmly that innovation, particularly digital innovation, represents one of the most transformative levers for closing health gaps, for enhancing system efficiency, and expanding access across the continent. Yet, indeed, as digital transformation accelerates, one of the most persistent and often underestimated challenges confronting the health tech ecosystem in Africa, our regulatory frameworks, the legal and regulatory landscape shapes everything from how health data is managed and shared to how medical technologies are approved, deployed, and monitored. Across Africa, however, this environment remains deeply fragmented. Each country has its own evolving mix of health laws, ICT policies, and data governance frameworks, many of which were not originally designed to accommodate emerging innovations such as telemedicine, AI-driven diagnostics, blockchain-enabled health records, or cross-border data exchange. This fragmentation poses complex barriers to scale. For innovators, for instance, it increases compliance costs and uncertainty. For investors, it raises risk perceptions. And for policymakers, it complicates efforts to integrate health systems regionally. The result is that promising digital health solutions often remain trapped within national borders, unable to fully realize their potential to serve Africa's 1.4 billion people. At the same time, we must acknowledge that regulation is not inherently restrictive. When thoughtfully designed, it becomes an enabler, providing clarity, safeguarding patient safety and data integrity, and as well fostering an environment of trust between technology developers, users, and regulators. The challenge, therefore, lies not in whether we regulate, but in how we regulate. So, balancing innovation with accountability and flexibility with standardization. It is against this backdrop that we have titled today's discussion, Navigating the Legal Maze, Health Tech in Africa's Fragmented Regulatory Landscape. Our goal in this conversation is to go beyond identifying challenges to unpack the root cause of fragmentation, examine what regional instruments such as AfCFTA might offer, and explore actionable policy reforms that can enable more unified and innovation-friendly regulatory ecosystem for digital health in Africa. And to guide us through this complex yet highly pertinent topic, I am joined by Mr. Abdulmumin Apolade Oshodi, Chief Executive Officer of Expand Canada Solutions and a legal practitioner at Expansion Law. Mr. Oshodi brings a wealth of experience advising technology enterprises and cross-border ventures on compliance, intellectual property, and digital transformation governance. His expertise offers valuable insight into how Africa can align its legal frameworks with the rapid evolution of health innovation. And at this moment, I'd like to introduce Mr. Abolade Oshodi formally by reading his profile. Mr. Abolade Oshodi is a qualified international lawyer in England and Wales, Nigeria, and Canada, with many years of legal experience in the corporate field. Abolade has had strong in-house experience with one of the largest infrastructure projects in Africa, the Lekki Free Trade Zone. He has also had strong corporate and commercial experience with one of the foremost law firms in Nigeria, Udo-Udoma and Bello Osage. Early in his career, Abolade had critical experience working for the most critical financial regulator in England, specifically the Insolvency Service, as a senior insolvency examiner and investigator. In Canada, he has built a strong commercial practice where he focuses on commercial law, commercial and residential real estate, mortgage and secured lending, and debt finance matters. Mr. Oshodi, we're delighted to have you here with us, and I look forward to an engaging and rich discussion with you.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Absolutely. We're very, very pleased to have you with us. And to begin our conversation, let's just establish a clear undertone of the core issue. Can you help us to understand what we mean by Africa's fragmented regulatory landscape? And why has it been difficult to achieve regulatory cohesion across the African continent? It will be
Thank you.
helpful when you're talking about it to unpack the structural and institutional reasons behind the fragmentation, as well as its implications for digital health companies operating in multiple African markets. Over to you, Mr. Oshodi.
Thank you so much, Dr. Atuken. Let me begin by saying some of the elephants in the room might be a commercial lawyer like me, and what do I see in terms of this very, very important topic we're talking about? I just want to really start with the lens that I look through for these problems that we have. I start with the aura of the fact that in Africa we have the most diverse population, one of the most diverse populations in the world, in terms of we have from one person to the other, from one tribe to the other. There's not many other continents that have as diverse as Africa is. Now, going back to the particular question, there are three ways to look at why it has been so difficult to achieve the regulatory coherence across the continent. The first that you very adequately and expertly put out is the structural difficulties. On one level, we have NAFDAC in Nigeria. On the other level, we have PPP in Kenya. And we have the FDA in Ghana. All these different regulatory bodies operate independently and with minimum harmonization. The second is procedurally that we the procedure that each of these organizations follow. They're widely different from those that follow the WHO preoccupied data and those that expect dossiers to be in English and those in French. This is very complicated and difficult to harmonize because of there's so many. And the last is where I have the most interest in, and which is why I started with the particular lens that I look through such a question. So for me, it starts with us recognizing that as Africans, the traditional medicine, when I say traditional medicine, the health systems that we had predate the European medical systems. So, and this is very important to understand in terms of when we're dealing with our health concerns and how to navigate through them. Are we looking through the lens that affect us personally in terms of our particular genotype and what affects us? Or are we looking through it through a different lens? So this is, and I'll address this later on in the subsequent questions. But this is the lens in which I look at in a way one might look very difficult to harmonize in the amount of different what looks very difficult in terms of the 54 different systems that are there and the very specific characteristic that defines the health of Africa and which Africa can help to harmonize.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I see that deliberately you don't want to dig deep. So this is the introductory part. And it helps us to set the tone to even begin to think really deeply about the fact that we are completely individualistic in our cultures and people as Africa. So really just continuing to align with what the what the European world brought to us, and thinking that we will eventually be better off even as we mature, is worth thinking back around and making informed decisions on what needs to change as far as our being guided to standardize whatsoever we decide to call regulations and rules as we go forward. And perhaps this is even the only way to aspire and achieve some of this development agenda and benchmarks that is ahead of us. So again, I thank you for that clear introduction. We'll now just go into some depths of the area and the topic that we're focused on. So now we're talking about cross-border and regional dynamics, building on what you've just said earlier. Let's consider how Africa's integration, the efforts we've made, intersect with digital health regulation. So the AfCFTA, which is the African Continental Free Trade Area, represent a historic attempt to create a single continental market for goods and services. So, talk about digital trade across the continent. How do you see AfCFTA influencing the regulatory environment for cross-border digital health solutions on the one hand? And then again, could it create a foundation for harmonization or shared compliance standards that make it easier for digital health providers to operate across multiple jurisdictions? In your opinion and experts, and I know that you've done a lot of work just really considering all of these solutions that are already in the play. Over to you, sir.
So let me, I will answer the question, but I want to frame it in something that we all know. I want to just quickly frame it in a way. And I want to use, and I apologize, I want to use Nigeria as an example, right? Because it's just easier. But the example I'm using Nigeria as, it's the same across Africa when we think about it. So we have, I've broken this down to, we have seven advantages. These seven advantages did not, no other continent has the same breadth of advantage. We have the traditional healers who have had systems of making us well, of giving us medicine that has existed for at least 2,000, if not more, years. Right? So these traditional healers, they have knowledge, and I hope I'm not being, but they have knowledge that are particular to our particular genotypes, what will make us well. And a lot of us that are alive today are, to a large extent, and this is logic, is as a result of that knowledge of that traditional. So we have that. The second thing that we have is we have, and this is going to the other level, we have PhD researchers. Like we as in Africans, and this is not, we have researchers high up in the medical field in any industrialized country you can think of. They're in the US, they're in Canada, and this is Africa-wide, not just Nigeria. So we know we have that as nationals. The third thing that we do have is we have like sophisticated regulatory bodies like NAFDAC, and South African, all across the continent, right? So I'm using Nigeria as an example. We have financiers. There are people that are willing to finance these areas for medicine. I don't think there isn't, but they are. Like, it's just a question of knowing where the finances are to go. We have patients. We have in Nigeria, in Africa, we're talking about 1.4 billion people that have very diverse genotypes and very diverse. Where, as I've mentioned before, we're a very diverse continent. In Nigeria, they're about 200 to 20 million. In terms, so that's a huge patient catchment area of where we can know which medicine work best for each person or each diverse type. We also have, this is the most important, what my whole research is based on, which is the source material. We know that people have been using different plants to make themselves well over generations. And we also have the infrastructure. It might not exist in every country, but we do. So in coming to how, what are the advantages or what Africa could do in regards to digital health, if we manage to harmonize this, and my whole work and my whole, and in terms of our previous meeting, is to find the opportunities. And my work is centered on step one, the knowledge that is already there. We're not putting, no one is making up that knowledge. The disadvantage we normally have is this knowledge is normally oral as against written. Now we have other systems that are existing in China and in India, which in most cases are written and are more recognized in the global medical field. But we have a huge catchment. Now, what I would say in terms of digital, if we manage to harness what we have, there is no telling in terms of if we have someone, a digital health provider that is in Nairobi, and what the service or what they're able to provide now extends to Nigeria. If we are able to harmonize that base knowledge in terms of the traditional knowledge that exists in both areas, then in terms of getting cheaper medicines, in terms of healthcare, and this is the opportunity that Africa can really, really make a difference. If we're able to harmonize, we cannot, it's very difficult for us to, if it's in terms of commercial or it's in terms of health. There's one dichotomy that I was thinking about, I wanted to address. There's always a narrative that, Africa is unable to take care of itself. There's a lot of health issues. And yes, we do have those health challenges. But then Nigeria is also the fastest growing country, or one of the fastest growing countries on earth. And Africa is one of the fastest growing countries in terms of population. So there's a dichotomy that we as Africans need to understand, that there are areas of the continent that are thriving in terms of birth, but there's something is happening from birth to a certain age where diseases and different things are coming into play, whether it's things like diabetes or cancer. And this is the exciting work that I've used artificial intelligence basically to figure out why this is and why we're not coming to a resolution. And AFTA is very important in terms of being able to harmonize the standards across Africa and use, there's an opportunity there for us to be able to use each, whether it's Nairobi, Johannesburg, Cairo, there's an opportunity for us to harmonize different areas of Africa for the and just off my head, it can be the digital like inventions that are coming out of Rwanda, for instance, to mix with the botanical strength that's in parts of Nigeria just because of the diversity from north to south, the testing or validation or everything. Western countries struggle with one thing. They struggle with the issue of safety. And there's numerous tests in order to make it validation amounts. And that's why if you're trying to qualify through the FDA in the US or you're trying to qualify through Europe for drugs, it's very expensive. But then if we understand, like what I said earlier, that Africans have been using some of these plants for 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years. So when you're looking to ask, well, this is no who's used this, and we have the genetic makeup that we've used something for that long. It would be one of the roles of AFTA could be to just, there has to be some recognition of that. You can't just be kept in that, oh, we'll feel comfortable going to this, but it doesn't have to be structured. But there has to be some recognition that people have been using certain things for thousands and thousands of years, and it hasn't had a bad effect in terms of where we are now. Like we have to recognize what we see before our eyes and what the population tells us. A lot of medicine that is being created, that is being developed, how is it developed? Like eventually, if an innovator or someone, anybody listening to this podcast is eventually, these things have their potentially eventually be taken by a researcher in a Western university or in the one university in the West, and it's taken over and it's patented. And we have a situation where we're contributing to this diversity, but we're not feeling the effects because a Western researcher can come patent it and take it away and develop it, and suddenly someone has a miracle drug. But if you look into it, you see some of these inspirations came from our own continent. I could go on and on, but I want to see a little bit.
When I just hear you, I my head actually swells of the possibility and the revolutionary the revolutionary possibility of what you're even talking to. And really, I just hope that more and more critical stakeholders for the future of Africa, and learn a lot of things that we're we assume we're stuck with, and begin to even think internally about how we want to move forward, organically as a continent. I'm really moved, by your thought process and the possibility. And I know you've done a lot of work, and I know that we'll get there. So let's just, continue. And I like where you stopped. There's a lot to say in all
Yes,
of this. So thinking about where AfCFTA is at and what we think they should also consider, the fact that we do have a history. We are products of the safety and the reality that, yes, we had forefathers, we had ancestors who survived ever before Africa was, interfered with by the Europeans and the colonial masters. So it's to think about, okay, what does that even really, really mean? And for us to unwind a little and begin to think about where our strength lies and what we can do by ourselves. And the fact that indeed, even, the so-called Orthodox medicine and European medicine, a big part of Africa of also in research is integrated in it. And so why aren't we also optimally benefiting from some of the outcomes? These are questions that are unanswered. And I think indeed, as a continent, we must wear that very curious and inquisitive yet a positive lens on where we are going with the advent of artificial intelligence at our use as a continent. So, as we examine this, what lessons can Africa learn from other regions? So, for example, the European Union, where coordinated regulatory mechanisms like the EMA and the GPR have shaped a more integrated approach to health data and medical innovation. And I know your research also must have covered this. So tell us a bit about that. Over to you, Dr. Oshun, Mr. Oshun.
yes.
Pardon me.
So, you know, and thank you so much for that. And it leads me on to my next comment. And this might be, I don't know whether things I say sometimes may be controversial, but we have to ask ourselves some questions. We have to ask ourselves, do we really have to be homogeneous? Is that really how we are? Do we really have to say we all now, with the greatest respect to the European Union and to the US or every other thing, but there's a push to be one and the same. Now, if we think about it just logically, I apologize to any non-Nigerians, but for a fact, we are 250 different tribes. We have different, like one in the city of Lagos where I grew up, we can all be very aliens to each other, but we find a way of harmonizing. So what I'm Sometimes what I when I think about that, I think, do we is that how we are, right? And because the diversity is our strength. So let me now come into what I've been able to use AI to do, okay? And where I come with that. A lot of the questions we have are already been answered. A lot of people say AI, artificial intelligence, what's it going to do? What's it going to do? How are we? Me, I have a personal characteristic. I've always asked why. I was one of those children that say, why has two tails? I always ask why, and I'm always going deeper into why. And I can do it. I used to be able to do it for a while until I was comfortable with the answer. So that's how I approach artificial intelligence. Now, there's two things. There's one thing about artificial intelligence that's a danger, but there's another thing that's an opportunity. Artificial intelligence will take you to a history that is predominantly Greek, Greco-Roman, if that's the word, and that's where the history will be. But when you challenge artificial intelligence to recognize that there's other societies in the world and they were actually, and then you take it through a process of logic, where you get to is nothing short of miraculous. And through this process, I've been able to, and this is on some of the things, I've been able to see solutions, which, and I must state this, some of these solutions has to be clinically validated, and some of these things have to be dealt with in terms of medically. I do not claim to be a doctor, but what I do claim to so I use AI to go through this, and I have found solutions and things that I have People say traditional knowledge can't be patented, or you can't patent it. No, I've done it, because if you say that, then what the West has been doing in terms of all the drugs we see on the street, they wouldn't exist. The difference that they're doing is that they patent synthetic drugs. We are pretty much, us and maybe Latin America, have the capabilities to be able to patent botanic drugs, especially now in the US. The US has a pathway for those sort of drugs. Like now they can eat, so that these are like the prebiotics you might see. So what I've been able to do using AI is to bring it pharmaceutical level standardization, or it's still all on a algorithm, but this is what AI drug discovery companies are based on. So I focus that on the inherent strength we have in Africa, right? And I've been able to come up with situations. When I say situations, I've been able to come up with things that have an effect on cancer and chemotherapy in particular, diabetes, what other one? And pain and pain. And so the process I'm going through is no different or not different from the ones this and sitting still, they found a new drug. But the there's a lot of what in patent is like white space there. And that goes to two problems. It goes to one problem, how underestimated African plants are. Now, these things that I could find, I don't claim to be an expert in artificial intelligence, but they're of the type of value that if Africans do not create pathway, and after in particular, they do not create a pathway for this, it will be done. It will be done. There is, like, Africa could be like the Saudi Arabia of drug discovery. It really could. But in order to get there has to be some sort of recognition of the inherent strengths Africa has. We can't keep saying there's a problem when in certain parts of Africa we might drive 1 hour and there's traditional knowledge trapped in there that could solve the biggest problems in the world. I've managed to patent a few of them, but it's a lot of work. I can't even, it's I can sit from here and I won't leave, and sometimes my family will do the complaining for me, and I can just be going through these things, going through these things, going through these things. The one thing, the first thing is respect. We have to respect everyone. Like if Nigeria as a country recognize all those tribes, all those different systems, all those different medicinal, all those different ways of doing things. If Nigeria recognized that they had that, categorized it, a lot of medicines, a lot of, it's the most unnecessary
Wow.
suffering in the world.
Wow.
So that's
That's a
where
big bang. And
I.
I'm so privileged, I mean, to be part of this level of conversation. I mean, what is the reality? What are we even talking about? And I do really hope that we mature beyond words, in this conversation. I hope that somebody picks this up and supports this incredible, thought process on what Africa can do differently, leveraging artificial intelligence and every other tech that is, available, at our disposal. Now I'm going to go on. We talk now about policy reform and innovation, focusing on national level governments particularly. There's often tension between protecting public health interests and promoting innovation. And you kind of mentioned it, earlier as you responded to the previous question. In your view, sir, what role do you see governments playing in fostering innovation-friendly regulatory environments that allow policymakers, investors, research and development, and innovators work together to simplify compliance to digital health as a whole? Over to you, sir.
So technology has to be something we carefully monitor. I don't profess that technology will have the answer to everything. I know vaguely in other areas, I've heard of, and I know, and I think a lot of your listeners will know about the history of M-Pesa, and as opposed to different digital health that came into the continent. We have to start with where we are. We have to build from where we are. I did some searches on AI in which I have to, I'm gonna have to, and this, if I'm wrong on my figures, but if I say it, a lot of Africans may intuitively agree, and I'll hold my my legal, I'll need to verify this, but it's estimated that around 80% of Africans rely on traditional medicine for primary health care. I don't know how true that is, but that is, if that is true, that is, we need to start from where we are, right? So we can start and say we want to do this, we want to do that, we want to do this. But if we're not starting from the reality of what Africans use as primary health care or use as alternative health care, then are we having a conversation about health care, right? So it's a question of improving medicine, improving healthcare. So we need to start from where we are. And there has to be some sort of figure that addresses that. There has to be some sort of African-wide, let's just ask that question and be honest about what the response is. Because if we are about 60, 70% rely on traditional, it the next step in thinking will be, well, we need to understand that we can't, you know, we have all the researchers and the PhD people on one hand, which, you know, I said, I'm not a doctor, the I really respect Western education, and that is not what I am saying in terms of, I am not one of those who can say, throw this out and say, let's just go back. And, you know, we have to be very as intelligent as we can be. Where are we starting from? If we say we're starting from anything that's close to that 80%, we need to validate that. We need to test it. We need to say, which plants are you using? Which ones are dangerous? Which one cross? Like, we need, and most critically, somebody, or whether it's after, because now we need to document in a way, and I'll say it in a way that's very, that most Africans will understand. We need to document what our grandmothers are telling us in terms of what works and what doesn't work. We need that data, right? So that would be something that I would really want a continental wide, or even so-called like ECOWAS, to really look at. We need that data, right? Like, we can't go by what was not, one of the things that I was able to patent was how chemotherapy affects us as individual, different ethno genotype people, as Africans, you know, tenderly. There's more of a chance that if we can figure out what affects us, it's going to reflect on the whole world. Because it's not new for us to see that civilization, a lot of genotypes, everything started here. That's why Africa is so diverse. So it's not even though we're just taking care, it's something like we're already a test case on what has affected us, right? So we need to start there, because we can go through all these things of what we need to do and all the, but until we bring traditional healers, traditional medicine, until we bring them into the discussion, like, even if we're saying, like, they have my work has gone into how do they prepare this? Do they ground it? Do they boil it? How do they do that? My work has gone into that, and there's some great, for me to know, there's some great universities and there's some great people already doing that work, but it's not enough. Like, if we're talking about investing in medicine, should we not at least figure out what affects us as people? Why are we basing our whole medical system on being a system that does not have, now, this is not a podcast where I'm coming to say this is bad, that is bad. This is just a podcast I'm trying to say. Let us document this. Let us stop saying, oh, my grandmother used to say that, we put that somewhere. No, we need to bring them in. We need to video it. We need what this does, what that does. It cannot go to the next world without us knowing. It cannot. That is an urgent need. And I've come up with a system. Like, I've been able to start at what is available and to get to what you can patent. I could have said all these things, but, you know, after you lit the fire under me and said, Some of these things can be the previous things I was looking at. Some of these things could be applicable to medicine. And when I looked at it, because what I do, I respect. Like there was a time, and maybe in most African countries, where someone can get in your car and you can take them. It is not it. We do not lie up to a certain thing. If someone is telling you it is, it's not a question of lying. It's that line. I don't think was even in our vocabulary. It's knowledge that's passed down. There was no refute. This goes back more than 100 years. When did diabetes become a problem? Diabetes did not become a problem until diabetes wasn't a problem before. It is now a problem. There's a lot of diseases that were not a problem before, but they became a problem. Don't we need to understand ourselves going back millennia in order to understand why this is coming? So these are the things that, for me, in terms of medicine, we really need to start with understanding what affects us. Because if we don't understand what affects us, how are we be able to go? And the technology exists now for us to put pharmacological levels on botanical plants. It exists.
Amazing, amazing. What I hear you say is there's a big, an enormous part of our reality that seems to be off the chart in what we call growth or evolving or advancing as far as medicine as an impact on Africa is concerned. Okay, please go on. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, so there's two things, and the first is leads on to an issue I am very serious about, and the first is bioprecy, right? This knowledge exists. I know it. I've been able to find it, and I've been able to take it to an extent. But if we don't, because this knowledge that we have is too important for us not to have legal protection around it. It's too important for us not to establish a way of a database, and also establish the knowledge, and also, yes, establish a way of making sure payments, which we have to, like, if you have this knowledge and you contribute to something that cures cancer, you should be able to have some. It shouldn't be up to somebody to take that knowledge and pretend it's so. In everything I am doing, there's an aspect that is there. I've had to patent this in the US. Right. I've had to patent in the US because that is where it's most likely to be taken advantage of, right? But it shouldn't be that way. There should be a database which we can take one from A to Z. If for anything as well, these regulatory bodies and drugs can be cheaper in Africa than everywhere else. That's just okay, that's that patent argument. There's a lot of steps to it which I'm able to identify, and this is knowledge that is not, it's just a way of organizing. So that needs to be, for me, the first step. Okay. The next step, once that is protected, because it can't happen before, is there has to be pathways, right? We have to have pathways that innovate in terms of these botanical drugs becoming pharmaceuticals. Like we're the only ones that probably have the way, have the, we're probably the only ones that can do it most effectively because of the traditional healer database we have. Right, so we need to have that, and we need to have something that is not common stuff. We need to say, okay, if we're in Nigeria, many like Nigeria, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, we know variations of this plant work, and they know thousands of people have used it for thousands of years for ABC. We need to have some sort of like fast track or some sort of recognition, because then what is the safety argument? What's the efficacy argument? Isn't it just for us to be able to do the testing and standardize it across? Then that is that. Once you do that, that pathway is created. And I know how Africans and innovation is not something anyone has to worry about. Like I'm one person, if there's multiple people, different, better, doing different things, then it is not out of the situation to or out of mind to imagine where the very capable innovators we have out there can do, right? As long as that database is there. And the technology exists now for you to have like a blockchain. Even if it's not actualized, there are companies that can do that. That is not something I've looked into, but there's ways to protect and to even enrich these people that have this knowledge that is the base knowledge for something like malaria or something. if we harmonize the knowledge, even across Nigeria, let's just focus on Nigeria and malaria. There's probably traditional knowledge there that we can harmonize. But have we, rather than taking drugs that have been given to us based on genotype that might not be ours? So these are the things that can happen. We can have agree on standardization, have like a you know have a coordinated multicultural safety test. We can have like an expedited Pan-African approval on things that pass this initial steps we have. And also we can do like a post-market surveillance and all these things that follow, but not before we do that initial work. So
Oh, I'm glad we're recording these solutions. We're in the solution stage. And so thank you for sharing all of this with us. Indeed, we hear you really loud and clear about documenting some of these already existing solutions and things that had already been optimally used by our grandparents, by our forefathers. Is to be able to bring them into the conversation and not just assume because they are in the villages, they are unreachable. By not reaching them, we are losing out on a lot of very important stakeholdership in the whole in the more robust and complete picture of health and healthcare. So again, we thank you for those words. And those solutions that you've shared. We're going to now spend some time on building the ecosystem. Let's talk about the broader ecosystems beyond regulation. So we agree that success depends on how government, on how regional bodies and private stakeholders coordinate to build a shared regulatory architecture. So as we look ahead, what do you think? Do you see progress towards a more unified regulatory ecosystem? Or do you see fragmentation remaining the norm? As you reflect on those questions, what kind of regional cooperation do you require or do you think is needed for us to balance innovation, safety, trust, and this very ambitious and bold line, that you've ventured into, which, by the way, it sounds like the most optimal way that Africa can ever reinvent itself in the advent of artificial intelligence and with the way that technology is going. So, over to you, sir, on building the ecosystem.
So, let me just start by where a little bit by where you ended, and then I hope I'm answering your questions. I'll try and go. So, artificial intelligence is there's a lot of discussions about it and what to fear, but one of the potential it has is to be the greatest leveler in our history, right? It's one of the things that can allow. It can allow Africa to scale, right? To unimaginable before that. That may end in the next 2 years, or it may end in the next 3 years. Who knows the way technology is going? A lot of things are happening in terms of what you're able to do. I think one of the things that is most important for the regulatory to deal with the regulatory mismatch that we have is. There's a lot that's being missed by how the West has developed, which is they have developed out of the loss of respect to the Greeks, the Rome, but they've evolved from that. But then there's a whole generation of things that are well, it has to do with, and I think that's the way I approached you initially. There's a whole knowledge base of different things. The most basic is, how do we get well? How do we feel better? We really have to start with a couple of principles and frameworks that I'll call them, which is if something has worked in a place in Ghana, it's worked in a place in Nigeria, and in Nigeria, let's say it's being lucky, it's worked in four or five different places within Nigeria in different climate zones, which Nigeria is able to say, or it's worked in Ivory Coast, or it's worked there. There needs to be some academic recognition of that. right? And there needs to be some sort of academic, and this is I've had to look at things like this, but it's there has to be some pattern that is recognized, right? For instance, I've done some things on diabetes, and maybe in a certain place they'll call it sugar medicine or good for sugar or variation of sugar in different languages, and it just appears in literature, and then I'm able to see that, right? And that's enough for me to look at that, and then you do some more investigation what is actually in it, and then there'll be some research that's gone into it, and then there'll be some policies, but none of these people are talking to each other. None of these people are communicating, but they're communicating to something that I can see. And I can see, okay, there's a pattern here. We need to, I don't, we need to be able to do that across everything we're doing, right? And we need to stop. It's not a question of as this person from this person from this place doesn't like this person or doesn't like that person. It's a question of together you can make a lot more than you can initially with you. That includes everybody in that value chain, from the financiers to the traditional healers. It's that wide group of people. There's things you can do for tech people like blockchains around there, payments, banks, financiers, history professors. There's a whole industry that can be built around this alone. And the whole thing is to get a drug that is 30,000 naira to be 3,000 naira. And it's economical scale across how many, across 200 million in the case of Nigeria, 1.4 billion in the case of Africa. And once you do, if you're going to a private hospital and you need something that is very, very, very specific, where is the place you need to go? If our way we want to get to is making money, then you can make a lot of money. If where we want to get to is being healthy, then we can be very healthy. Is where if where we want to get to is to control, then there's lots of there has to be, and we can do this better than most industry in being able to make sure whoever has this knowledge has the financial financial incentive, and there has to be safeguards in place as to make sure it's a, but there's just an opportunity there. I think for me, I unfortunately I see it clearly, but in my it might be like the biggest issue in North America is opioids. What if I was to say we have a solution in Nigeria that has had an effect on opioid, and I've been able to pick it out, take it all the way from just seeing it to patent it? What if I say that? And I didn't, I need people that can test this. I need people that can take it through the medical, take it rigorously. But the thing is, and this is where AI is a leveler. If someone comes back to me and say medically it doesn't do this, then I'll go, I don't have to be medical. I just need to go through another way and say, well, because the only thing I'll say to AI, then this has to work. AI will go through millions of texts. It'll go all over the world. It'll find the most small thing in order to satisfy this has to work. So this greatest leveler of humankind. I don't know how else to say
Absolutely.
it. I don't know how else to say
And I hear you,
So,
there's an enormous industry that is quite untapped,
yes.
sitting right there in Africa, and we're all just still grappling and groping for the crumbs of the Industrial Revolution, unfortunately. Let's look at the future, and because also we have to and the conversation continues. Well, let's take a minute and get excited about the future, looking ahead. So there is an emerging debate on whether Africa needs a continent-wide health regulatory framework or should continue with country-by-country approaches that account for local context. I mean, from what you've said, you do really believe in harmonization. Would you consider that having it at a continent level will work? Do you think Africa needs that continent-wide health regulatory framework, or will we just suffice with our country-by-country approach? Again, perhaps that's more practical. And on that note also, would you be kind to share an example of health tech companies that you've come across that succeeded or struggled with navigating some of these cross-border challenges so that we can have some of our listeners benefit from the practical sense of how regulation impacts innovation on the ground. Over to you, Sam.
So, it's This is a difficult question in a couple of ways for me, because I have my base, and my base is we need to understand medicine as it applies to us. I'm not a doctor, but I'm making that statement, and because of everything I've said before, it doesn't matter whether and for me, if Nigeria does it, South Africa does it, Rwanda, we need to understand what medicine applies to us. But let's say that is done and we're engaging how the future should look and what should happen. If harmonization, the ideal harmonization would be, for instance, and I think I just broached it, Rwanda has a strength in terms of being the techno, like let's say the tech capital of Africa, then let us harmonize in terms of all the medical devices that need testing and all that. Like let's say South Africa has the most rigorous, and I don't know these for a fact. I'm just saying, like let's say South Africa has the most rigorous health drug approval. So let them handle some of the more, and let's just say Nigeria has like and this is not because I'm just saying, for example, I'm not sure, has the most diverse plant coverage. In which and the most diverse people that would have been using a certain plant for decades, then let them handle things that regarding that and bring the larger ECOWAS into it, because some of them may be affected as well as the regional from South Africa and regional for Rwanda, and let's say Kenya has the so we need to one of the things is to see, like, if there's a big cake. Everyone can have a piece, right, of what this means. But let us all recognize that it is, the end goal is very important to like, as long as the end goal is to make drugs available, make our own particular what affects the diversity of Africa work, then that would be what I would really suggest. That would be my opinion on where Africa can go. Now, in terms of what has worked, and the maybe if I begin speaking about it would make sense. No, it would jog. I'm not sure about the particular company's name, but I know there was a Kenyan company that was trying to export or trying to sell something within Tanzania. Regulatory, there was a little bit of regulatory wasn't working, and I think Tanzania now created a fast track for that particular drug or from, I don't know the names, and I apologize for not being specific, but I'd come across that in my research, in which, that was a good example of inter-country recognition, right? In which one country took the step of doing a fast approval to allow. So that, but that on a continental wide basis in terms of the future would really work. And there has to be some space for the innovation to happen. There has to be space for innovation to happen. I don't need to go and file in the US. I shouldn't need to do that. And I shouldn't be put into, like, if I'm not able, then it satisfying a need. So like all that should stay within Africa for Africa. So whatever I do, it's predicated on African genotypes
Oh,
that answers your question, or I'm still.
yes, absolutely. And I like the originality and the very African-centric viewpoint that goes into our outlook of the future. We all need to take ownership as a continent on what it is exactly we want to do with health tech, with tech itself. And how much do we really want to own it, given the fact that it's one of the most remarkable technologies, remarkable gifts of mankind. And it so happens, and I usually say this, that Africa is the one privileged continent because you are the one who is still evolving and developing, and we have this, AI and all of this. Non-digital and digital technology at our fingertips to harness and to use. I'm very, very grateful that we've had this conversation on this topic, and this is just the beginning. I'm hoping that we will get some teasers and responses and feedbacks or some inquiries to even want to talk about this more. So before we close, I'd like for us to draw on your practical experience to offer guidance to the entrepreneurs and the investors that are in this audience. What advice would you give to health tech founders or investors who are expanding into multiple African markets for the first time, particularly in navigating regulatory uncertainty and ensuring compliance at scale? And then afterwards, we're going to take our final closing reflections from you. Over to you, Mr. Oshodi.
So I come from the legal field. I'm not a doctor. And one of the things I had to get over very quickly is, a little bit of imposter syndrome when I came on your podcast, and I'll be very honest about that. But this is what I would say, and it's nothing Africans do not do naturally. If you think if you think globally first, you think globally first, and then you bring it back home. And that's the way I look at it. Like, you think this, you have this solution. How does it work for mankind? Full stop. No, nothing else added. Then you see, then you go to whatever you're developing, you developed it for that. Then if for a few of those innovators out there, if you now take the extra step and say, okay, now how would this affect me and who I am and where I am personally? Then, you use that framework. Right, you develop things globally, but then you bring it to how it would affect you personally in terms of your framework. My parents and a lot of parents out there used to say, well, there's nothing you can see abroad you can't see here, all those things, home is where. And it took me, but it is, there's more potential in Africa than anywhere else. Now, I may have to do, you may have to do things that are international, but when you bring it home, your scope, your leeway, the way you can grow is, and the difference you can make is much larger, whether you're sitting, and it's not a situation of where you are. For me, I'm not one of those that say you must go back, you must travel, you must, it's all about mentality. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you can still make a difference. So I'll say, most entrepreneurs are driven by the insatiable need to make a difference. And I think if you have that, then you're more than halfway there.
I totally agree. There's no place like home. So if you're an audience and you're listening, we know that right here in Africa, this is where you can have your optimal opportunities and advantage. Yes, go gather that knowledge, go expand your horizon, go broaden your insights, but be sure that this is where you can really maximize the use of it in Africa. So finally, in one sentence, how can Africa turn its regulatory diversity from a barrier into a competitive advantage in the global health tech landscape? Over to you, Mr. Oshodi.
I think from everything I've said, my viewpoint is, and it's like I started looking, like if I say where I started on this journey, a lot of people laugh, but but it is a foundation. I started in music. I started looking at things in terms of music and looking at the way we express ourselves as a continent, as a people, and going back and back and back from there. I would say, we are the key to our own future, right? However we understand that, however we believe that, it doesn't, for me, it is wherever we are the key to, to being able to maximize ourselves and through great organizations like yourself that are trying to do the connection between the world of Africa. And I don't stand on the corner and say Africa, Africa, Africa. It's just who It's just what we can do. It's just, I think we should start to recognize ourselves and not be surprised by what we are and what we can do, because it was probably there 600 years ago. 500 years of that's 500 years. Well, it was there 3,000, 4,000, up to 65,000 years ago. So that's a lot of history. history, and we need to believe, we need to stop being surprised by who we are and just be who we are. And I know I haven't
Wow.
answered you.
Oh no, but I mean, I like that landing. We need to stop being surprised about who we are. It's been there over decades and years and centuries. So again, I mean, that's remarkable, and it's good to pinch each other and kind of just really swallow that reality. It probably will make us even do more things ingenuely. Maestro Shodi, I'm really thankful. Thank you so much for this deep, insightful conversation. It's really helped us to frame the regulatory challenges, not only as an obstacle, but as a strategic lever for system strengthening, for accountability, and for market expansion. It's also kind of really made us to reflect and think deeply about, wait a minute, we can do things differently and not just really continue in the way that we've been fed or we've been made to believe is the only solution. Copycat is what we jokingly call it. For Africa to fully harness the power of digital health, regulatory coherence, whether through alignment, through mutual recognition, or regional collaboration, it must become a shared continental priority. Again, to our audience today, we thank you for joining this episode of the ABC Health Podcast series. My name again is Maurice Atoki, and I look forward to continuing this dialogue as we explore how technology, policy, and partnership can together transform Africa's healthcare future. Once again, we thank our guest for today, Mr. Oshodi, for this very remarkable piece. It's been truly, truly enjoyable for me. It's out of the norm. It's not what we hear every day. And it's really opened up a lot of excitement and questions and me. And I'm sure that a lot of our audience also feel that way. We can indeed begin to look at this differently, wear a new heart, and begin to challenge ourselves. What indeed should we as Africans be doing differently as far as charting our personal health trajectory and regulatory framework in the advent and in the times of artificial intelligence and many other technologies that we have access to in our times? Once again, Mr. Shodi, we thank you for your very audacious and remarkable contribution as our guest today. And we hope to have another series with you at another time, maybe to bring, some feedbacks and also maybe questions that you might be willing to share more insights about. Thank you again, and stay tuned for more on this topic. Have a good evening from Nigeria. Bye for now.